Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. We're sitting alongside president and founder of the Hoban Law Group, Bob Hoban.
Welcome to the Hoban Minute. My name is Bob Hoban, and as always, I'm sitting here to my left, to my side, the venerable Eric Singular, and today is the Turn the Tables episode. Let's talk about Eric Singular for a moment and his perspectives on this industry. You do such a wonderful job of guiding us through our interviews with global experts in this industry. Let's see what Eric Singular has to say. Let's put him on the hot seat. No, just kidding about that. As it relates to this, though, I wrote down, this is the Turn the Tables episode, and I just wanted to sort of get your perspective. So first of all, let's talk a little bit about Eric. How did you and I meet?
Well, let's see, Bob. It goes way back. I think when I first became aware of you and the work of the Hoban Law Group, I had to be pretty young. I think I was probably still in high school, to be very honest with you. I will say this because I actually think it's kind of funny. When I was in high school, it was right at the time that medical marijuana was really blossoming here in Colorado. And of course, I went to East High School, right here in Metro Denver, and definitely a proud angel. And marijuana was a big part of our culture.
East High School, by the way, a beautiful building.
Oh,
very well taken care of.
Unbelievably beautiful, and just a wonderful, wonderful school in all kinds of respects. And I was exposed to marijuana, and I had my own experiences with marijuana. And I recall getting into a tiff with my parents at one point or another, like many of us around marijuana. It was kind of like a dazed and confused moment, if you will. And then years later, or at least at some point, they told me that they were, you know, my parents are authors here in Denver. They told me that they were working on a book with you. And they started to say, oh, Eric, we're working with this guy, Bob Hoban. He's a very, very acclaimed cannabis lawyer here in Colorado. And they were going and visiting dispensaries and starting to see what this industry was becoming. And I was like, what the hell, guys? Just a couple of years ago, you know, I was Columbo, man, if you will. I was being persecuted for experimenting with marijuana. And that was really my foray and introduction into what you were doing and my parents' interaction with you, which is working on a book about the Hoban Law Group and really about the development of the cannabis industry here in Colorado and how you, my friend, have played just an integral role and really gotten to see not only how this industry has developed here in the state of Colorado and the United States, but worldwide, which is what makes it so much fun to do this with you. And of course, we get to have on all these wonderful guests who share their little slice of where cannabis is going in the world.
Well, I love that you say slice, and we've talked about this before. When you grow up in Jersey or in the East Coast, when you get a good pie, a good 18 to 24-inch pizza, it's got a big plastic thing in the middle. The reason for the plastic thing is to keep the box from sticking to the cheese, right? When you look out at all the different slices of pizza, which sounds delicious right now, by the way, but when you look at it, all the different slices of pizza, you understand that everybody has something to offer, whether it's the sauce or the cheese or some of the toppings, and that is some of the excitement. But let's talk about your father and your mother, not terribly long, because nobody ever wants to talk about their father and mother terribly long.
No.
But I would say that your father, I met him. Stephen Singular is a best-selling author. Very well known for a number of things. Near and dear to my heart is the fact that he wrote a book with Terrell Owens, former Philadelphia Eagles wide receiver, but also is sort of the definitive documentarian of things involving Warren Jeffs and the Mormon culture, but the JonBenet Ramsey matter. All of that aside, Steve and I met. And we started to talk about, I wanted to know the process. I had no idea. And we were so fortunate that in our backyard, right here in Colorado, that in Denver that there was somebody like your dad that was not only willing to sit down and have a cup of coffee with me or lunch or whatever the heck we had the first time, but to just talk about what that process was. And then we began to work together on developing some things. And so ultimately, somehow, some way, that led to you and I getting connected beyond your father and your mother, of course, who's been a wonderful influence. And really, when we sat down and talked about things, she would draw things out of people in the room, myself included. That was pretty darn impressive.
Well, you know what's interesting, and you know, I have, and everybody who knows me closely likes to point out that I have a very unique relationship with my parents, and that I think is probably attributed to the fact that. Yes, even though they are my parents, we also work together to some degree. And I think, I don't know, one of the things I think that really is interesting about the whole dynamic here is that my parents have always covered true crime. That's really their niche. And so they've sat in a bunch of courtrooms. They've listened to, and this is, you know, different law than we talk about at the Hoban Law Group, but they have an interesting experience, a journalistic experience, an investigative journalist experience, sitting in courtrooms, listening to people go through forensic evidence, and just very, very unusual place for me to grow up in was just around these people who were fascinated by true crime. To be honest, you know, they did a lot of different things. They wrote books about serial killers. They wrote a book about Warren Jeffs, as you mentioned. Just as a quick aside, I actually got to be with them. I couldn't have been very old, probably 11 or 12 years old, driving around in the Mormon countryside down in Utah. And just wild experiences growing up. You know, while they were working on the book, I was there. And that's, of course, kind of flourished into a unique relationship that we all have as kind of course, parents and child, but also kind of co-collaborators. And it's interesting with you because I think when they met you and when they wanted to, you know, when you started to work with them, there was some overlap between the kind of all of their courtroom experiences, their experience in dealing with district attorneys and the legal system as it relates to criminal law. And the things that you were doing, and I know it captured my dad's attention with the work you were doing with Eminent Domain and RTD, and we were talking about this a little bit earlier. Just, you know, you sat before your days in cannabis, you were at an interesting place here in the development of Colorado and in Denver, as Denver really started to become what it is today, because Denver does not look like it does today, like it did when I was growing up. It looks very, very different. And I think we've had so much influx, of course, and a lot of people here in Denver attribute that to the development of the cannabis industry and recreational marijuana. And it's just interesting. When I came back to Denver after being away for a little while, it was one of the first things I noticed was just wild development. And I don't know. I think there was an interesting overlap that ultimately led us to coming together.
No, so when I met your father and your mother, ultimately I was actually in the running for a judgeship, and my life would have taken a very different course had I pursued that vigorously versus the path that we're down today that we've since documented. But in addition to being a wonderful author and just wonderful human beings, your parents, your father is a wonderful 80s sports fan, and you know, Philadelphia 76ers, Celtics series. He knows all the details. He knows all the dates. We talk about the Phillies. We talk about baseball in the 80s. His appreciation for those things to this day really, you know, is remarkable to me. And, of course, just the appreciation for the Grateful Dead and the layers of the Grateful Dead like an onion. But Eric Singular, unknown, working with your parents, I know that there's a child, and I think once or twice maybe you had come through when I was there at your house working on things, and we might just, you know, waved or said hello. But you came and wanted to intern with a hemp company that was very close to our law firm. And you came in, and you kind of said, I wanted to work in a hemp industry.
Well, this was 2016, and I came in to your office, and I just said, I'm interested in hemp. You know, what can you tell me? And this was, you basically said, just hang tight. It's coming, man. It's coming. And I don't know, patience is always a virtue. And
all we need is just a little patience.
Just a little patience, yeah. Man. And that ultimately is what grew into the entire opportunity that kind of sits before us, is just being patient and realizing this was always coming. This was always imminent. It's just a matter of right place, right time. And there's nobody, you always say that when you go places, you're like, it's like you're coming from the future. And, you know, when Bob Hoban tells you what's coming next, you got to listen. That's some serious wisdom right there.
I certainly hope so. But at the end of the day, there's a couple of things I just wanted to get your take on. I wouldn't say, since you're new to the industry, because that sounds condescending or dismissive, and that's not the intention. Because you've paid attention to the industry, you've paid attention to things for a long time, but new in the sense that you're like deeply involved and you know on an intricate level who folks are and what they're doing. So at the end of the day, there's kind of like three or four topics. From a tech perspective, what's one of the most interesting things that you see from your perspective, given your background, given your age range, so forth and so on, what's an interesting tech thing that you see in either the hemp or cannabis industry, marijuana industry, that's exciting to you, or that you went, holy smokes, that exists, or people are doing that?
I'm going to throw a real wrench into this question, Bob, which is whenever you think of tech, you think of cutting edge, you think of what's the new thing, you think of Silicon Valley, and I think what this industry has actually highlighted to me is how important it is to go low tech and to realize the importance of agriculture. Agriculture is, of course, for the industrial hemp side of this industry, where everything starts. And that's where I really got to cut my teeth. And even though I never really thought of myself as somebody who would be in the agriculture industry or interested in the agriculture industry, it's vitally important. You don't think about it often, but the size of the country that we live in, the United States, and you think about it, there's a couple major cities here and there. There is so much farmland. There is so much to this country that is built around farming and agriculture and feeding the population. And of course, I think about this a lot because, you know, I talked to my parents. When my parents were growing up, they knew where their food came from. They knew where almost everything that they consumed, whether it was food, clothing, whatever, came from. It just was
for
a
me,
different
time. That was the Tasty Cake Factory.
You were very, very much in touch with I guess what we call today the supply chain. And the supply chain, of course, is this, you know, it's a buzzword. It's a keyword. You know, it's changed a lot. And for me, it's been very interesting to come into this industry and just learn and talk. I think the most fun thing is not the technological things. It's talking to farmers. It's talking to these people who they live out there. This is their life and their livelihood. And they're some of the most fun people to talk to. They're some of the most interesting people to talk to. And they're just nice. And they're a little lonely. And I think that's fair. You know, they're very socially distanced, COVID or no COVID. I don't know. You go tech, you go low tech, I guess is my impression.
Yeah. Low tech is in its simplicity, it reeks of wisdom, because it's so true, particularly when at its core, this is all agriculture or horticulture, and we need to embrace that, not run from it and try to pretend it's something different. All right. Second of four topics. The marijuana industry. And when I talk about the marijuana industry, a term that's much maligned, despite the fact that that's a legal terminology that we must refer to make the distinction between marijuana and hemp, has been deemed essential in not only numerous places across the U.S., but around the world. We've talked a lot about that topic. What about the marijuana industry? The over-the-counter, the flower, oil, edibles industry, largely, almost exclusively intrastate, with certain exceptions around the world. What about that interest or excites you?
I really like IPAs, and I know I'm from Colorado. It's the most Colorado thing you can possibly say. So, I like pale ales.
You think everybody knows an IPA? No, just describe it. Just in case.
Well, you know what makes an IPA, of course, is the hops. Because most beer, they rely on different components of the ingredients that are used to make the beer to kind of highlight. for example. If you're drinking a Pabst or a Keystone or a Coors,
ice in a hot sunny day. Sufficient.
They're relying on the malt. You know, they're kind of trying to cut out some of the flavor profile and just make something that's easy to drink. For me, myself, I'm a huge fan of the IPA, which really highlights what are the actual specific hops, the varieties of hops that are used to create a certain beer. That's going to be, you know, everybody talks about terpenes and flavonoids. I mean, it's almost identical. For beer. And for me, from the marijuana perspective, what I think is interesting is the idea that there are all these strains of marijuana. You know, you think back to when the movie Pineapple Express came out and everybody was out there trying to find Pineapple Express strain. You know, we talked to Tony and Ross and they're trying to produce this movie and they're going to try to do something similar. I think it's brilliant, but I really want to hone in on the science of this, which when you're talking about beer and you're talking about IPAs, you're talking about a couple of, you know, Citra, Mosaic, Simcoe. These are different varieties of hops that are used a lot in the IPA.
Someone who really appreciates and can distinguish between it matters
right.
to you.
Oh, it matters a ton. It matters a ton. And I think that is where it makes me excited to see, beyond the indica and sativa kind of categories, which have really been dominant. Of course, we've had all these different strains out and about there that are very, very recognizable. But I think as people really start to distinguish the varieties of marijuana that they're using and ultimately the effects that they get from those, I think that'll be really interesting. It'll be interesting for me to see a craft marijuana market develop in a way that it's not developed now, just because they don't have the scientific data to really hone in on varieties. I even question this. I even question if you buy the same name of marijuana from a couple different dispensaries, is it really the same? I mean, what are the standards that are really saying, okay, this is Blueberry OG. There's only one Blueberry OG. If you're putting Mosaics into a beer, Mosaic hops, and you're putting that on the label and it's not Mosaic hops, you know, you're in for a world of hurt.
There's market and technical repercussions for that.
Absolutely.
I remember a long time ago a client saying, I've got some Maui Wowie for you. That's great. And he pulls out this big bag and the guy I was with began to say something about, this is a vague recollection, Maui OG. And so he took out a black marker and go, it's the Maui OG. He washed out the word Maui. So things are getting potentially better in that world, but everything you mentioned is something to be excited about and look forward to. All right, 3 out of 4. And that is, what is exciting to you about hemp beyond CBD? Unless CBD is your thing.
It's a huge question. It's honestly what I deal in every day, because it's, you know, while there are so many potentials for cannabinoids, I really like to delve into the fiber and grain applications of industrial hemp. And I think here in the short term, just because it's a lot cheaper and the infrastructure really already exists, I think it'll really be interesting to see how the U.S. hemp grain industry develops. And I want to say this. If you are a person who goes to the grocery store, which should be everybody listening to this podcast, buy hemp seed, hemp hearts off the shelf. If you've never tried them before, just go for it.
Buy them all. Taste them all.
We need the demand for these products to increase. That's going to be what drives everything else, every other part of the supply chain.
All right, so I'm going to deviate and interrupt, but there's a purpose behind this. Here's why there's a problem with the development of hemp seed or hemp grain as a viable market substitute for other things. If I go to Jamba Juice and I want to get a large Jamba Juice and I want my addition, what do they allow me to have? Flax seeds, I believe, some lemongrass, a couple
chia
things
seeds.
Like that, chia seeds. Why can't I have hemp seeds? Well, and by the way, those additions are 25 cents, 37 cents, 52 cents, whatever it might be. Hemp does not cost hundreds of dollars per ton like those other grain varieties. It costs thousands at a minimum of dollars per ton. How do we end that, Eric?
Go.
How do we address
go
that?
And here's the thing. here's the thing, and I'm very serious about this. Until the consumers really indicate that this is something they're going to buy, that's what it's going to take to get the investment and everything else that is needed to get the other parts of the supply chain off the ground. If they look at it right now, the investors and the all the capital looks at it and they say, you know what, this is all great and fine and we like hemp seed, but the folks up in Canada already have this covered. There's no reason for them to invest. And the same is true for fiber. If they look at it and they say, you know what, we would really like to have fiber processing here in the United States, but the demand is pretty low and the Chinese fiber manufacturers are already meeting that demand, I'm not going to invest a lot of money into this. So really, I just encourage everybody listening, there is almost a hemp product for everything in your home. If you just look around your home and you see all the things that you have in there, there are things that you can replace with hemp. Yes, they're more expensive right now. It's kind of a novelty. But until we can show that the supply is very warranted, it's going to be very hard to increase the processing infrastructure that we desperately need here in the United States. And as somebody who talks to farmers all the time, the farmers always say, you know, I love what you're doing. I support all of this and I want to transition to hemp because the thing I'm doing right now doesn't make me any money anyways. It barely keeps me afloat. But until you can really demonstrate that there's going to be a market for this, I can't jump in.
Well, $1,200 to $1,800 bucks gross per acre for growing hemp grain is something that farmers must consider with the right varieties because it's certainly available. 4 out of 4, Eric, bringing you to the finish line here. Last component. What's the most exciting thing about the international or the global cannabis industry? We talk extensively about it because that's perhaps the most exciting thing to me because our clients and our attorneys and our folks are working directly to build it every single day. So I'm a bit biased. What do you see?
I approach it from this angle, Bob, which is that we live in a world that is so dependent on petroleum. It's wild to me because when I really started to dip my foot in this industry, I never realized that the clothes that we wear were made from oil. I think that's a wild thing that a lot of people don't think about. You don't realize.
What do you mean by oil? That makes sense to me, but just.
Right. So synthetic fibers, nylon, these are all byproducts of petroleum. So something along the oil refinery process, you get all of these different byproducts that can be turned into, you know, whether it's the thing that holds your hand soap in your house, your little container, or your body wash, your shampoo bottle. It's unbelievable. It changed our world. I don't think people realize that in the 20th century, our world radically changed because we found out that we could create all these things with oil. And it was great. There's no, you can't hold those people and say, well, they did the wrong thing, because at the time, it changed everything. It isn't until more recently that we realize, okay, yeah, you can create all these things, but they take forever to biodegrade. And they are the culprit for a lot of the pollution that we see. So now you see this movement towards plant-based plastics, towards plant-based commodities, everything, every single vertical, because we don't realize, again, we're kind of out of touch with it, just the influence of petroleum in our lives. And I think for me, what I see is just the biggest upshot of all of this is really something that can help us pivot toward the world that we probably need to get to, depending on really who you listen to with respect to climate change and climate predictions and everything else, towards a world that really values plant-based goods and commodities, and really an economy that is kind of shifting away from the one that's relied on oil for a long time. And that's a very heavy topic. There's all kinds of things you can touch with that. It's not very important for right now, but just the potential that's there, I think, is worth noting.
No, Eric, I couldn't have said it better, honestly. And the concept or the topic of plant-based economies is something that I want us to dive deeper into as we continue to talk about things, because I think that is really that concept. And hemp, cannabis, marijuana, it's all included as a part of that. But plant-based economies are something that can revive various parts of the world at any time during an economic recession to fill basic needs, as you started out by talking about, with you got to know where your food comes from. So, Eric, you've said it all. I've spent a little time on the mountain. I spent a little time on the hill. You come with a well-rounded approach by all accounts, and it's my pleasure to work on this with you. So cheers, my friend.
Cheers.
And until next time.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Hoban Minute. Do you have any ideas for episode topics or guests? We would like to hear from you. Reach out to us at media@hoban.law, and stay tuned for more on the Hoban Minute.